Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Every Saturday morning.
That's right. And before I get into this, it's a nice 87 degrees in Richmond, Virginia, over there at the Delmarva area. So it's going to be a hot day. Hopefully, there'll be a little breeze coming off the ocean. But how y'all doing out there? I hear the East Coast is a great place. And someday I'd like to visit, other than in an airport. All right, now, thank you so much for joining us today, everybody across the nation. Every Saturday, we pay homage to our favorite radio gods, Mark and Brian, with the hopes of getting them into the Radio Hall of Fame this summer.
Oh, can't wait. We got to cross our favorite people that their votes are coming in, and they get nominated. I think they got a good chance this year.
I think so, too.
Mark was talking about it yesterday on his podcast, and, yeah, I think it's pretty solid. It's pretty solid.
So,
for those of us who recently followed us, thank you guys so much. You know what? We have increased now. I think we're about, like, 980-plus of listeners and followers on Facebook. So thank you guys so much.
Yay!
Absolutely. Remember, if you want to be a part of the show, don't forget, you guys can call in if you like. But also, you can tweet us, you can text us, you can email us and everything, all those wonderful things. So just make sure you guys get part of the show, be a part of it. You know, that's the more fun for us, too, as it is. Well, we got a pretty cool show for you guys today. We're going to give you guys a pass moment for Mark and Brian in celebration of them being nominated again to the Radio Hall of Fame. We'll be doing some catching up with the three of us here. We got another episode of the Neanderthals. And coming in at 10:30, we have the one and only Professor Andrew Fracknoy. So very, very cool. So we're very excited about that.
Yeah, don't forget to clear your throat before you speak. You can interact with the show commenting on our website, yourweeklydose.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1. Find us on Facebook or email us at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com. And you can also download the show for free from our website, but you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, Delmarva Radio. Just search for Your Weekly Dose. And most importantly, don't forget to rate and review the show.
That was a wrong note.
That's a sign.
Yeah, that was a big sign. Well, hold on. I'm doing it right. Hold on.
Yeah.
I shouldn't sing. Definitely better than mine.
Yeah, just make sure you go from you go to a D instead of a B chord. That's the big my big mistake. So anyway, yeah, we were playing, guys, Train. That was Drops of Jupiter in honor of our guest today, Andrew Fractoy. So remember, anytime you guys want to download the music that we play here on our show, it's simple. Go to Amazon. They got everything there. Music, movies, whatever you want. We just picked up some things recently, too, from Amazon. So, you know, it's real easy to do. Everybody's doing it. Might as well. Just go to our banner. Go to our banner on our website, yourweeklydose.com.
So if all your friends used Amazon, would you?
Absolutely.
You bet your life.
Unless it's DealDash, you know. But, you know, but other than that, absolutely use Amazon.
Hey-o.
Yeah. You know, it's really easy to use. Again, so go to our website, click on the banner, make sure you bookmark it. That's the most important thing. And that way we get credit for it. So simple as that. All right.
Okay.
Go ahead and mute the guitar, please.
Thank Muted.
You. Moot. That way, don't get no pops.
No pop.
No pops.
Who's next?
Well,
I don't know. Well, you know what? We were just talking about Mark and Brian, Radio Hall of Fame. We're so proud of the guys. Second year in a row that they have been nominated. Of course, get ready, Zach. Last year, they were up against one of. I think overly rated. He's a good guy, but Ryan Seacrest beat us out.
Ryan Seacrest, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, he got in great. So we're going to get in this year, I think, and our hopes are looking really good with it. So we want to give you guys another pass moment with Mark and Brian. Of course, you know, there's two things that were constant with Mark and Brian through the 25 years that they were here in on KLOS in Los Angeles. The first one was miniature theater, which we do, which we call a pocket-sized cinema. But the other one was Elvis, and there's no way in hell we are ever going to duplicate that. Elvis was from the beginning of their program, going all the way back to Birmingham, Alabama. And, of course, they brought it out here to L.A. So we're going to play you a little bit of Elvis, and this is the guys just finished talking about Elvis's movie, Flamin' Star, when Elvis happened to call in. So let's take a listen.
I like the cut of his jib.
And quite a jib it is.
Nicely cut jibby. Oh, the king, baby.
All right.
Oh, Flamin' Star.
Is there a phone call?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take it.
Gee, the hotline's ringing.
Let's see who it is.
You ready?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Everybody's all set.
Elvis?
Flamin' Star.
How you doing, King?
Flamin' Star.
You singing some of the old tunes?
Flamin' Star. I was laying up here and wrestling in my bed taking some drugs.
Elvis?
Oh. Listen, I'm just laying here in bed. I just leave it. Getting sleepy.
There's something I want to ask you, Elvis.
Mm-hmm. Who is it?
This is Mark and Brian.
Tony Curtis, sir?
No, Tony ain't here. Listen, there's something I want to ask you. Nice, Woody. You in Graceland, right?
Well, Graceland up here in my bedroom. I haven't done to leave my bedroom no more.
Graceland's in Memphis. How is it you pick up the show?
Oh, I got a bomb and my belt buckle picks it up.
So it kind of picks up the race.
I lay with my white jumpsuit on like I never take it off. I just want to tell you, I was listening to what you guys were saying about the band-aids on my fingers.
Right.
They ain't even keep my rings on.
No?
No.
Why is it?
Well, first of all, I don't need no band-aids to keep my rings on.
No?
No, I put these rings on when I was skinny.
Oh, and so they're just their own.
Their own. Ain't coming off. Ain't nothing coming off. That's why this jumpsuit I was on. This is the same jumpsuit I wore in Hawaii and things. And it ain't coming off either.
Haven't rolled ever since, have you?
It's a mess, Timothy. It's a crawl in my butt constantly.
Well, see, we had heard it was to keep the jewelry.
I don't see the reason I have band-aids on my fingers is because I have a damn guitar player.
Oh, is that it?
Oh, I shred.
Do you now?
Yeah,
well, you know, we're doing a thing in the fun zone with Pete Townsend
today. Who's that?
Pete Townsend of The Who.
Oh, one of them damn foreigners.
Yeah, well, he's a rock and roller, kind of a legend.
Thank you. You're a legend or something?
Yeah, Pete Townsend, he's coming down. In fact, if you wanted to...
Oh, yeah, the Who, that was like a tummy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a tummy.
Yeah. And if you wanted to hop on a plane and come down and be with us, bring your guitar, you could stand in the fun zone with him and play.
Well, you tell Pete not to call me because I just don't want to talk to him.
Don't want to deal with it?
I don't want to feel like it.
We understand. How's Scylla?
No, Scylla's looking good.
Is she?
Oh, yeah.
Is she right there with you?
I like smell her in the morning.
Did Is it a nice smell?
It's a nice smell. I smell her in the morning.
Yeah. And she,
Ooh, I'm feeling kind of dizzy. Hang on.
Smell getting dizzy.
Yeah, like I grab all of them. Oh, yeah.
Get out and give us a little kiss for
her. Oh, we'll get her. We'll get her. A little action. No, we're some of that.
You been knocking that out lately?
Huh?
You been knocking that out?
No, she ain't gonna give it up lately.
Now, how come?
I don't know when she was on fire. Maybe came out jumpsuit off.
What, again? Yeah, we heard jumpsuit off.
She ain't seen the little king in a while, and I can't get the jumpsuit off me.
Well, I mean...
It's okay, though. I like to dry hump her. I kept on that when she sleeps.
A little dry humming action.
She likes to sing Climb Every Mountain.
I know she does.
I don't mean to turn on my way here, silly.
Silly.
Oh, that's silly. Well, she's wearing that butt flossy.
Is she?
Yeah.
She's looking good.
There was a monkey for that matter. Used to wear them white cotton panties.
Really?
Now we're going to 90s now.
Are you?
Got them peak abuse and them...
For the monkey.
For the monkey, got that.
Scylla's looking good, so is the monkey, for that matter.
Got that floss. Got that, what do you call it? What do you boys call that? The buffalo there?
Yeah.
Got little snaps on there.
Yeah.
EPX.
You like it, do you?
Easy access for the monkey.
Which is nice.
No, that monkey, because the monkey's horny.
They always are.
That's a monkey. I like it. Come here, buddy. Come here, monkey. Come here. Come here. Don't come here. That monkey.
Oh, Elvis.
Hey, monkey. Hey, monkey. Hey, monkey. Come here, monkey. Come here, monkey. Red, bring the monkey over here. Red, come up here. Got that monkey. All right, monkey. I got the monkey now. All right, hey, monkey. Hey, monkey. Scylla's sleeping, bum.
Scylla's what?
Scylla's sleeping, monkey. Go get her.
Is Scylla still asleep?
Oh, yeah. I won't tell the monkey to get on top of her. So, come here, monkey. Hey, come here, monkey. Monkey.
Have Red bring him over.
Here, monkey, have some of this. Oh, yeah. Yeah, all that monkey lighting up. Oh, God, no, there's that monkey. Oh, look at that monkey. Now, go get her. Hey, Scylla, wake up, monkey, won't you?
Wake up, monkey, won't you?
Hey, oh, monkey. Monkey. Is there a delay or something? Like a
sometimes it takes a while to travel up.
I'm going to get the money, and I'm going to get her. That's why I'm going to leave you see you, buddy.
Well, listen, Elvis, thank you, as always, for calling. We love and appreciate the updates.
I'll be listening to you, boys. Oh, did he?
All right, Elvis. Thanks, man. Elvis, the king, calling from Graceland. Obviously just waking up for the day and had the monkey on.
Oh. Yeah, classic stuff.
Monkey.
Anybody else?
All right. Unfortunately, we have...
Breaking news.
About an hour ago, BBC made this announcement. It is with... Why am I getting...
Emotional
about this. It is with great sadness that the family of Peter Green announced his death this weekend. He died today, this morning, peacefully in his sleep. Peter Green, of course, was one of the founding members of Fleetwood Mac, one of the premier rock bands of ever.
Yeah.
And I feel extremely lucky I got to see them some years ago at the Pond. And unbelievable. Their music is amazing. Their performance skills were always amazing and everything they did. So the world's going to miss Peter Green. He was quite a performer. He was active all the way up until about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, with that too is insane is that I know for a fact our good friend Christian James Hand, I'm sure he's getting hit hard by this too as well. We're losing our legends. I mean, little by little, we are truly losing our legends in what from the beginning of rock and roll to the middle of it and things that have influenced us to this day. And, you know, it's just amazing because so many kids, I think, are listening to the older stuff or what people call classic rock more so nowadays, I think, than what's being played on the radio. Because in all honesty, the music was better. It really was. And so I would... if you guys are on your Instagrams or your Twitters or anything like that, make sure you look up King Trutt. That's King, K-I-N-G-T-R-U-T. And that's our friend Christian James Hand. I am sure at some point today or next couple of days he will be doing a tribute to Peter Green. So, yeah, no, we're losing our legends, man. And that's what it's coming down to. I mean, you know, we're at those ages where... It's like, wow.
It's happening.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's long gone are the days of losing Jim Morrison and Janis Joplin and Jimmy Page at a young age. I mean, we're losing the guys that have lasted into their 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah, he was 73.
So, wow.
So it wasn't quite as old as you would think somebody would die, but yeah.
You know, and I mean, we joke about it too at times of your age, because I mean, you're 70, but I mean, I just turned 50, so it's like, holy cow, man. It's
the world moves on.
It does, you know, but yeah, when somebody close to your age, you know, passes away, it kind of worries me about you.
It worries me about me as well.
You know, because, I mean, still 70, I mean, that is, that's young.
It is, yeah.
That is absolutely young.
That's why I ride my bike and try to eat halfway decent and, you know, be as healthy as I can. And anyway, that's... Yeah.
Well, condolences to the Green family, absolutely. And to the members of Fleetwood Mac as well, of course. So, well, other than that, let's catch up with each other, guys. Yeah, this will be a short one, though, because it's just the three of us. So, Steve, what was your week like?
Yeah, well, that's how my week was. It was very short. I came over here on Wednesday, and we worked on some script stuff.
Yeah, we got a lot done.
We did.
We got a lot done.
Yeah.
So, one we're going to give you here in about, you know, 3-4 minutes or so.
Yeah,
so
hopefully I always love to do that. I love brainstorming and working with other people to write things and stuff like that. I've learned to enjoy writing.
And let it flow.
And let it flow, yeah. So
absolutely.
That was my week.
That was your week?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of mine too, really. Did some stuff around the house. Actually, I got some stuff done because I'm into firearms myself, but I'm not a gun crazy guy, you know, or whatever. Just a crazy guy. I love guns of the old west, basically. That's my
I do too.
My thing. I do not like modern weapons for whatever reason. It's just, I mean, I don't know. And I think with working with Steve and I working at Knott's Berry Farm and everything, there is a romance to the western.
Yes.
And everything. So I have a couple of black powders myself right now. I have a 357 Ruger Blackhawk. And I just got another 357 recently, so doing the background check right now on me to make sure I'm a good boy. So
don't have them talk to Sheldon Cooper, though.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so I'm waiting for that and making sure that goes through. So I'm excited. So hopefully if things work out, then I'll be able to pick up my new shooter. And I just saw our friend V. Our former co-host, her boyfriend Mike took her shooting for the first time.
Oh, how fun!
And she had a blast, you know, doing it. And I said, "Well, when I get my new one, I said, well, I'll go to the range and everything." Yeah. So, which is kind of cool. And then, you know, it's funny because I've been getting back more and more into my firearms again and the black powders that I have. I've been doing some research recently, and I did not know this, but did you know that during the Civil War they actually made paper cartridges?
Say what?
Yeah. Okay, so for the cap and ball, because everything prior, during the Civil War, it was all cap and ball, which means that you had to put the black powder, you know, in each chamber of the gun. You had to put the ball in, pack it down, put in a wad, and then you had to grease the cylinder so that way the bullet would go through a little bit easier. You don't need it, but it helps with it, though.
It was a tedious ordeal.
Very tedious.
Putting in the wad was the fun part.
Yes, exactly, because, you know, it had to fit the hole just right.
Yes, it did.
When killing your opponent becomes a chore.
Yeah. And, well, something I found out, though, but during the Civil War, of course, everybody was using cap and balls. They actually made paper cartridges. And there was a certain way to do it, and to where it was used with smoking paper. You know, like when you roll your own cigarettes, cigarette paper?
Oh, yeah.
It was done with that. So you would... They kind of created their own little cartridge.
Sort of like rolling your own.
Kind of rolling your own, and then you would stick at the very top, and you would glue the bullet to the paper.
Okay.
And then you would shove that whole thing down into the chamber itself.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a quicker way to do it. So,
well, maybe guys, not too quick.
Well, no, it was, because when you
wanted to go off prematurely.
When you wanted to reload rather quickly, you had to reload rather quickly. So versus trying to do everything, you know, one by one again. So you would make a bunch of paper cartridges for yourself and carry those and then put those in. So it was really interesting. I didn't know those even existed. And so I want to try that now.
Just
with
a
mine.
Quicker way to get it.
Yeah, to get the bullet in and everything. So, which is kind of really cool. So I learned something today, this week too, as well. So kind of fun. Zach, how was your week?
The more you know.
Well, I lost $200, but that's fine. Not expecting to grovel over that.
But you didn't play craps when you went to Vegas, huh?
Because there wasn't really a lot of tables around for me to even notice it, and I just didn't even really ponder it. So I just skipped it.
Okay.
Anyway, I mean, like I said, I'm already down $200 at this point from slot machines.
So you would have walked out with two grand, had you?
I didn't bring a whole lot of money to bet with.
You don't need a whole lot of money.
I know, but psychologically, you can't convince me that I'm gonna win anything and not lose anything.
You got to go with me then.
Okay.
And play the craps. You got to play the line. You got to play the pass the line, pass the bar. And
next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next time. But the biggest project of the week was helping our friend Quentin Flynn with his animation demo.
Wonderful.
He's working on getting into a new agency that is very interested in him. His manager wants him to have fresh demos. And the conversation we were having, he's like, well, I haven't had a fresh one in quite a long time, because he's been with the same agency for so long.
So you gave him a fresh one.
I gave him a fresh one. And I'd play it, but I don't think he'd want that right now, so maybe we'll save that for another time. But
yeah, we'll ask him.
About 10 hours, I was up to 1:30 in the morning last night working on it, but we finished it. So he's sending it to his brother to just go over a few things, like levels and whatnot, because he does that for him already. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to do the video game demo.
Oh, awesome.
So that one will actually be easier. But
wonderful.
Yeah, so that's
it was a busy week for you then.
Yeah. I learned a lot on this little program of mine, which is funny, too, because I'd never done something like this before. I'm literally, you know, on the phone with him. We're corresponding. As opposed, it would be a lot easier in person.
Right.
But we're doing this through the phone, through, you know, our hearing. Mm. He's on the same level of hearing as I am.
What?
Shut up.
Okay.
But you know what?
Do you guys need a moment?
No. I think what I said was already implied.
Yeah. No, but that's good, though.
We have high-definition hearing.
And you're helping out another good
Oh,
friend,
but no, so. What I was going to say is that what I mean by that is we have, like, the same kind of hearing. He kind of hears things the same. Well, Sean, you do, too. Mm-hmm. He hears things the same way as I do. It's like, you know, trying to mix one into the other, it's got to sound perfect. Like, the words have to finish, the s and the puzz, like, there can't be any of that, and
right,
that's why it took 5 hours for 2 or 3
oh,
days.
No, you gotta go through something like that. You gotta go through with a fine-tooth comb, so,
yeah, which we did, and it was fun. And that's my week.
Cool. Awesome. Well, you know what, I think it's that time again, Steve. We gotta check in with our favorite TV show.
Oh, that's right.
History began on July 4th, 1776.
Wait, go back.
No, we go through this every week.
Stay thirsty, my friends. Chubby's going back to the 1970s.
Chubby's going back to the 70s. Oh, it's on.
Welcome to the fifth episode of the following the Neanderthals.
This show and too. Already the wheels
Sorry.
Are off
This
the
show
track.
Follows the life of the Neanderthal family as they discover many firsts in their lives. Last week on the Neanderthals, they discovered making musical sounds. Since they have expanded their musical repertoire, let's catch up with them and find out what they are playing today. Looks now like Donk is starting to caress Wonk. And now it seems they are about to... Yes, they are. Now, Konk... Oh, my goodness. Konk is beginning to rub on Schlunk, and I think they are... Yes, they did, too. Now, if you don't remember our characters, then go back to our fist. I mean... I mean...
How's this for stretching it?
I mean, first episode. Well, now here comes Grandma.
Oh, you guys are doing it all wrong. Here, let me show you.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And boy, a show was that. I have to go take a shower. Join us next week as we hear Schlunk say...
Take it all, baby.
Between that and Fist, I'm a little disturbed. This is your narrator. Oh, cheers.
God.
You know, always amazes me. You always learn something from science, you know, and the Neanderthals.
Yeah, yeah.
Science, yeah, on the National Geographic
Channel. Science is neat.
So.
You never knew. You
all right,
never
guys.
Knew.
Well, we're going to get ready and for our guest, Mr. Andrew Fracknoy. So we're going to be right back in just a few moments. We're going to play this nice song for you.
They say our solar system is centered round the sun. Nine planets large and small parading. Some night up in the sky. Interplanet Janet, she's a galaxy girl. The solar system is from a future rock girl. She travels like a rocket with a comet team. And there's never been a planet Janet hasn't seen. No, there's never been a planet Janet hasn't seen. She's been to the sun. It's a lot of fun. It's a hot spot. It's a gas. Hydrogen and
Well, for those of us who have listened to Mark and Brian know that they were men of science. They're always conducting experiments, wondering if you can cook a hot dog with a battery. And is Brian's yell louder than an ambulance siren? And could you crack a frozen turkey? All these questions were obviously answered on the show. But when it came time to find answers about the cosmos, there was only one man that they called. And today that man joins us. He's an award-winning scientist and educator, known for his skill in interpreting astronomical discoveries and ideas in everyday language. He served for 14 years as the executive director of the Astronomical Society of the Pacific. The National Space Club presented him with a Lifetime Achievement Award in Space Science Education, and an asteroid number 4859 has been named Asteroid Fracknoy by the International Astronomical Union to honor his work in sharing the excitement of modern astronomy with students, teachers, and the public. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to our program Professor Andrew Fracknoy. How are you, sir?
Yay! Woo!
Oh. Can you hear me?
We got you now, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Good. How have you been?
Well, I my temptation is to say cosmic, but no one is all that well these days because of the pandemic, but it, you know, considering that I'm now a retired professor of astronomy, I'm doing fine.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, first of all, thank you so much for joining us on our program and everything. You know, we got to enjoy you for so many years on Mark and Brian. But I want to kind of take things a little bit to the beginning with you. How is it and why you yourself got into astronomy?
Well, that's actually an interesting story. So as the listeners can probably tell by my unusual last name, Fracknoy, I wasn't born in this country. I actually am a refugee from Hungary. We escaped from Hungary during the brief revolution that happened in the late 1950s and came to America in 1959, and I didn't speak a word of English when we got here.
Wow.
My mom did. She was a translator, but I was, you know, really good in Hungarian, but not that good in English. So she hit on the idea of using comic books, reading comic books out loud, to get me more up on the language. There, the pictures and the words kind of go together, so it's easier to grasp new words. And that's what we did for weeks and months. We read comic books, many of them about outer space. Superman and everybody else has connections to outer space.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, at age 11, I got fascinated by outer space. And pretty soon I spoke English, because young people are good at picking that up. And then I went to the library and got out actual books about astronomy, kids' books about astronomy, and was fascinated by those. And then I just continued sort of reading and getting more interested. And I went to a nerdy high school for science people in New York City, and the rest is just, that's how I got into the career.
Interesting. Did not know that about you. So growing up, though, what was your favorite comic book?
Well, it was Superman. I think there was no question. Superman came from another planet, but he was also an immigrant. A lot of people don't think about that, but Superman had to adjust to being an American, which wasn't so easy. He had to have the secret identity, and he wore strange clothes, which we consider his costume. But so all of this sort of resonated with an immigrant. And he was also always trying to do the right thing and a little bit awkward in his Clark Kent identity. And I glommed onto that as a character I could identify with.
Amazing, amazing. So after getting interested in it, I take it then you got involved in high school. And by the time you got to college then, you were really involved with it, correct?
That's right. So I actually went to college and applied as an astronomy major. Which was interesting. There were six of us in the entire class of astronomy majors, and so, but they did. And, they had a very nice astronomy major, and they had an observatory. So, then I was just in the astronomy world after that.
And what made you decide then to continue on and become a professor and teacher?
Well, so I came out here to California to do graduate work at Berkeley. I was a graduate student, but I really began to love teaching. Even while I was in graduate school, I was occasionally told by my professors that I was too interested in teaching and not interested enough in research for their taste. And I just found the idea of being able to convey, particularly to non-science people, the incredible excitement of astronomy. I mean, at the time that I was in graduate school, there were so many new discoveries coming and so much happening. And I found that I had a little bit of a skill in teaching. And so then I just, my career moved more into the direction of teaching and writing and even eventually doing some radio work.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's wonderful. I know listening to the show, you know, all those years with Mark O'Brien, I know that you were a big favorite of a lot of students there, you know, where you taught at. And they, from my understanding, there was lines waiting to get into your class. So I know you were a very, very popular teacher.
Well, thank you. Yes, eventually, I mean, I taught at a number of institutions. I taught at San Francisco State and other places while I was a part-time teacher while I was an executive director. But then when I went back to full-time teaching at Foothill College, that was why they hired me. They wanted to really grow the astronomy program and have many more people take it, particularly in the evening, where community members, sometimes adults and retired people, could come back and take the class. And so that worked out really nicely. So by the end, I was teaching 900 students a year. Jeez. So I miss teaching, but I don't miss giving those grades, I'll tell you. 900 grades a year was a lot of grades to get.
Whoa. I bet. Well, I know you and I were emailing back and forth this past week or so, and you had mentioned to me something about these talks that you are doing, and it's entitled, Where Will Jeff Bezos' Great-Granddaughter Go for Her Honeymoon? The Top Tourist Sites of the Solar System. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. So, you know, this is a tough time for everybody, and I don't mean to kid around about it at all.
Right.
But many of us are, you know, confined to our homes or having to deal with the pandemic. And so I thought, what would be a fun way? A lot of people have asked me, is there coronavirus out there? Could this have come from space? Is there any connection? And I say, no, this is really a terrestrial organism. Unfortunately, because it is an Earth organism, that's why it's so good at infecting us, because it's part of our own biosphere. And so this has nothing to do with outer space, but if you think about it, if you really want to get away from the virus, the place to go is out there. So I thought to myself, what kind of fun thing can I put together? I often get asked to speak by civic groups and libraries and so on. What could I put together that would be fun like that? And that's the idea I had. If you could be a tourist right now in outer space, or if someday we get spaceships that can take us as tourists to other worlds, what are the top tourist destinations in our solar system where there's no virus and you could, with proper equipment, enjoy yourself? So I put together the top 10 tourist sites of the solar system. And the nice thing is, of course, that because of all the space probes that the NASA scientists and scientists around the world have been able to send to these other planets, even distant Pluto has now been covered, we actually have pretty good close-up pictures of the planets and the moons with which we share our cosmic neighborhood. So in this tour, I can not only discuss where future tourists might go, I can actually show the destinations where they might have hotels. Wow. And have exercises, and that's a lot of fun.
So if you can briefly, what would be the top three places to go?
Well, so this is tough picking the top ones, of course, because we just so that everybody knows, we now know 8 planets, 5 dwarf planets, 4 rings, and hundreds of moons in the solar system. So you really do need a travel agent, because it's tough to choose where to go. But if you ask me for my top ones, let's see. I guess number one would be Mount Olympus on Mars. Turns out that we've named the tallest mountain on Mars after the ancient mythological home of the gods in Greek mythology, Mount Olympus. And it really is an Olympus. Thought is that because Mars has lower gravity, it's only 38% the gravity of Earth, it's easier to climb. On the other hand, it's going to be a long trek from the bottom to the volcanic cone in the middle. So I think this is going to define macho in the future. That you are not a macho tourist unless you've climbed Mount Olympus all the way from the base to the top. And it may take you several days, to say the least.
Wow.
So that's certainly one of my top, and probably my top destination. And, you know, we are not so ridiculously far from doing that. We this past week, 2 countries have sent spacecraft to Mars that have never sent them before. One is the United Arab Emirates.
Oh, wow.
Wow. The United Arab Emirates have a space program? Who knew? And then second of all, China, which has sent things to the moon and into space, but now is sending a probe, including a little robot car, to Mars. So between all the countries that are sending spacecraft to Mars, and we ourselves at the end of July hope to send a very sophisticated rover to Mars, of course, called Perseverance. NASA's hoping to launch that at the end of July. So we're exploring Mars with our robots now very actively, and there are people, you know, rich people with aerospace companies, including Jeff Bezos, who are starting to think about the kind of spacecraft you would need and the kind of training you would need to send people to Mars. Elon Musk has even talked about one-way journeys, which I don't think the government is going to allow, that we would then send people to Mars and watch them die on camera. I don't think that's yeah. going to go over with the national authorities. but just the idea that we could begin to really think about this, suddenly I don't think my idea of the tourist tour of Mars is so crazy, because in the decades to come, we may well develop both the technology and the human training. You're going to have people really trained, and there's going to be a lot of discussion of loneliness and the long trip, and, you know, be months and months and months to get there, and maybe years, depending on the speed at which you travel, and then being there, and, you know, the nearest hospital is going to be millions of miles away. So this is a serious undertaking. But nevertheless, it's something that's, I think, within the realm of possibility in the next century.
You know, Professor Fracknoy, when John F. Kennedy was president, you know, he said by the end of the decade, you know, we're going to send a man to the moon. And it definitely got accomplished.
Right.
And how, if people... You know, if countries, including the United States, let's say, pulled together, funded a true space program properly, how soon do you think we could get to Mars?
Well, see, that's the big issue, is that it's not just the technology, it's how do we keep people safe.
Got it.
I think we have the technology almost ready, you know, especially with these new heavy-lifting spacecraft that are being developed by SpaceX and by NASA itself, and the Europeans are working on this. I don't think that the technology to shoot people to Mars is that far away. What's difficult is first getting them back. You have to, if you get to Mars, then you have to lift off. So you have to land not only the people and the habitat, but also a rocket to get them back up, just like the moon astronauts had to have a rocket to get up off the moon. And then something to get you back. And so they're thinking about having a base in orbit around Mars, and, you know, the ship from Earth would arrive at the base, then that there would be a lander, then there'd be something that came back up, and then another ship would take you back to Earth. So that's all doable. The question is, how do we keep people safe? How do we give them a habitat where they can survive on Mars, where your first deep breath would literally be your last deep breath?
Right.
The air is 95% carbon dioxide, which is what we like to breathe out, not in. And the air pressure is so low on Mars, but the atmosphere is so thin, that your blood would literally boil. That
really?
If you were not in a spacesuit, the pressure so low that bubbles would form in your blood, the air would try to boil. And so you would essentially get the bends and die from that. And
wow.
It's also pretty cold on Mars because it's further from the sun and has a thin atmosphere. Anyway, I won't go on, but it's a tough place. It's a tough place without protective equipment. So a lot needs to be done before we understand how people are safe. Robots are fine, but people are more fragile.
Professor, this is Steve, by the way. It's great to talk to you. It's good to hear your voice. Did you ever see the movie The Martian?
Yes. Indeed.
What did you think about the direction that went when he found a way to survive? How realistic do you think it was, or if you thought it was really possible to have done that?
Well, so not today. But no, Andy Weir, who wrote the novel, really consulted with NASA scientists. So there's one, which he knows, there's one totally incorrect thing about the movie, which is that storm at the beginning, the storm that knocks him over and knocks him out. And the storms on Mars are very weak because the air is so thin. A wind really can't knock you over. So that he knew that was wrong, but he needed that as a plot device. Everything else in the book and the movie was done to be as realistic as possible. So once you admit that it's possible to have the kind of colony and habitats that they had on the movie, then I think the way that the rest of the movie worked out was just fine.
Cool.
Yeah.
No, I like hearing that. I like to hear somebody who knows what they're talking about talk about things like that in movies. I know Neil deGrasse does it all the time, too. He talks about space movies and stuff and how he agrees with it. So
yeah,
I like to hear
that's
that.
Right.
So basically,
we scientists are so happy when we find a scientifically reasonable movie, because there's so many that are completely anti-science or ignoring science that it's nice to have something which is scientific.
So basically, at the beginning of the movie, instead of the wind blowing and having him get stuck with that antenna thing, the wind should have maybe blown and he should have gotten like a splinter or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Paper cut. A paper cut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Well, good. So astronomy, I mean, there's always new things happening every day, you know, and it's so amazing too, because sometimes I'll look up in the sky at night and go, and on a good clear day here in Southern California, sometimes, especially with everybody staying in, we've been able to see more stars and they seem brighter and everything. Is there anything new that is coming up or going on right now that we should probably look up at?
Well, I think it's now getting too faint, but there's a new comet in the sky called Comet Neowise, which was just discovered. And even if you don't have a chance to see it with a telescope, because it's getting further from Earth, just Google it, N-E-O-W-I-S-E, Neowise. It's the name of a satellite. And there are some amazing pictures on the web. If you just use Google Image and look for pictures of Comet Neowise, it's remarkable. Oh. It's a beautiful comet which had one of the longest tails. Comets are chunks of ice left over from the time that the planets formed. And when a chunk of ice gets close to the sun, as this one did, then the ice evaporates. Whatever dirt and dust was inside that frozen early chunk of ice gets released, and it gets left behind and pushed away as a long tail of gas and dust. And so look for these pictures that have this amazingly long tail of loosened gas and dust from Comet Neowise. But in talking about what's new, the thing I have to talk about and the thing that I think is the most exciting part of astronomy right now is planets around other stars. In the last two decades, this part of astronomy has been completely revolutionized. When I was first getting my degrees in astronomy, we did not know a single planet that orbited a different star than the sun. We knew the planets that orbited in our solar system, but no other planets were known. Planets are small, they're faint, they're very hard to see. We just didn't have the equipment to detect planets. Today, over 4,000 planets are known to be orbiting other stars.
Wow.
And that's, as I say, it's a revolution in our understanding. It's a real revolution in the technology, where we've gotten good enough to detect, sometimes indirectly, the existence of these planets. And what's most exciting is that some of these 4,000 planets are like Earth. They are solid planets in orbit around the star in what we call the habitable zone, which is a nice expression in astronomy. It means a place where if you're on a planet with an atmosphere, water could be liquid. There could be rivers and tide pools and oceans. And that's what we think it took for life to begin on Earth, the chemicals and the solvent, the water, to get life started. And so on these other Earths, going around other stars, we think conditions are also right for the beginning of life. We don't know if life has begun or not, but we are for the first time able to identify other Earths out there, as well as other Jupiters and Marses and many other things. But other Earths are perhaps the most exciting. And everybody wants to build even better telescopes to get even more information about these other Earths and, you know, to see whether there, you know, might be Mark and Brian listeners out there, too.
Absolutely.
I'm sure there are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. two questions for you. So the first one, I want to kind of go back to the comet a little bit. With comets, we know that they travel. They have this big orbital type of traveling path that they have. Have we been able to figure out how fast a comet travels through space?
Oh yeah, sure. We can measure the speed of any object where we know the orbit. We can see it one day and then wait a week, see how far it's gone, and then get a sense of how fast it's moving. What's interesting is, though, that the speed changes. As it gets near the sun, the gravity pulls much stronger on the comet, and so it falls around the sun really fast. And then as it gets way out, the gravity of the sun is less because it gets less of a distance, so it goes slower. So there's a real variability to the speed. What we do know is that this particular comet may not come back for like 7,000 years. It's on a long orbit. So take a look at the pictures now. You're not going to see the next one.
Yeah, no kidding. And then talking about these different Earths, have we been able to find out which is the closest one to us so far?
Yes. So this is the exciting piece of news. The closest star to the sun is called Proxima Centauri. Centauri is the constellation of the centaur. Proxima, like the word approximate, means nearest. So Proxima Centauri is the nearest star. It's about 4 light years away. And that star, although it's not like the sun, it's a much dimmer star than the sun, has a planet in the habitable zone. It's much closer to the star, so it's warm enough. So the very next star next to the sun happens to have an Earth-like planet. In some ways, it's probably not Earth-like because these very dim stars are not as stable as the sun. So that might not have been good for life. So I don't know if there's going to be any life on it. But there it is. The very next star has one. And philanthropist in Silicon Valley, Yuri Milner, has already given $100 million to different universities around the country to make a plan on how to get a mini spacecraft to go look at that planet. How would we build a mini spacecraft and then send it using laser beams, build an array of lasers, which would push some kind of sail attached to this mini spacecraft, maybe not much bigger than your cell phone camera, and send maybe hundreds of these mini spacecraft in the direction of the Proxima Centauri planet and take a look at it. So that's not going to happen real soon, but the development plans are now underway for actually sending something. And he'd like to send it at 1/5 the speed of light, which means it would get there in 20 years.
Right.
And that would be great if we could do that.
And that's pretty quick.
Exciting things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by our standards, 1/5 the speed of light is outrageous. So only an array of lasers pushing this tiny thing could make it go that fast. And we're just developing the beginnings of the technology. But what a fun project to think about.
Absolutely.
Probably confuse the hell out of aliens that might happen to be somewhere out there going, what the hell is all this?
Right. Equivalently, though, we have also started looking if any aliens have sent such little spacecraft to the solar system. There are new plans to look at some of the nooks and crannies of the solar system to see if maybe there's some leftover or dead alien technology, because they sent a probe this way and maybe got stalled or something like that. That's a real far shot. I mean, I don't take that seriously. But if we do it, maybe aliens do it too.
Yeah, you never know. I would say start with Area 51. That's where I would start, and kind of go from there.
Right.
So, absolutely. Mr. Frank, it's such a joy to hear your voice and explain things to us. I mean, you definitely have a way of teaching, and I could understand why so many students lined up to get into your class. And, it's funny because every time I heard you, just now, it's like you make me feel like a kid, and I want to go to the observatory today, to take a look at things and so forth, because it's just amazing on how you explain everything.
Well, you're very kind.
just telling the truth. But overall, of course, we are a podcast where we pay tribute to Mark and Brian. And don't know if you're aware now, but this is the second year in a row that the guys have been nominated to be inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
And so your memories of being on the show, what was it like for you?
Well, it was really quite remarkable. I have to say that there was a wonderful combination of kidding around and seriousness, which I really appreciated. So I understood that they were trying to entertain their audience, and at the same time, they were so interested in astronomy and so wonderful at asking questions. And I got the feeling sometimes that the show stopped a little bit when I was on, and they got more into the questions rather than just the kidding around. Mm-hmm. And we had the most wonderful discussion about cosmic issues and our future and things like that. So I really appreciated the serious interest that they paid to these topics and the way they kept talking with me, I think, even after the initial time ran out. So I think we had a really nice time with it, and I gather that the listeners liked it too, because they kept asking me back.
Absolutely. I mean, you were definitely, you know, one of the favorites, and you know, there were a few people that kept coming back, and you were definitely one of them. And I mean, there was times where I would be late to work because I wanted to pull the car over to listen to what you had to say, and because of the way that you explained things, which was just wonderful. You know.
Well, thank you very much.
How many years were you a guest with the show?
Well, you guys said 7 at the beginning of the show. I had never counted.
Was it 7? Okay.
That sounds about right. I don't really know. It just became part of my life. I know my son, who went to school in Southern California, occasionally met someone who said, "Oh, Fracknoid, are you related to the guy who was on Mark and Brian?" So there must have been a good listenership.
That's wonderful. That's great. Yeah, I mean, because I know Mark. I think Mark pulled you on a couple of times too, when he came back to radio on 100.3 The Sound. So it was, again, like listening to an old friend, and of course listening to you today. It's just absolutely amazing. I mean, I can listen to you for hours just explaining different things and how they work, and you have such a knack of I don't want to say dumbing it down, but making it simple, so that everybody understands what's going on.
Well, it's everybody's legacy. It's everybody's birthright. The exploration of science is really very much a public enterprise in the United States, and I think we scientists owe it to those of you who are funding this with your tax dollars to explain it properly.
Absolutely, absolutely. So with looking at our solar system, how much more do you think we can discover just within our own solar system itself? Have we covered everything? Do we know everything? Or is there more to learn from just our own solar system?
Oh, there's a lot more to learn. So we just recently took a spacecraft called New Horizons and sent it by Pluto and learned amazing things about Pluto, which actually has a frozen nitrogen ocean, of all things, way out there. Remarkable thing. And there are other Plutos out there. One of the reasons Pluto got demoted from being a full-fledged planet is that, first of all, it's small, it's a dwarf planet, but also it's got many brother and sister planets out there, only a few of which we think we've discovered. And we've watched the orbits of this is a region of the solar system we call the Kuiper Belt, Kuiper, after the Dutch-American scientists who first predicted it. And in this belt, there are not only many Plutos, there are many other smaller worlds. It's a whole region out there we're just starting to explore. And there's a tiny hint, which is now being taken very seriously, that even further out, there might yet be a ninth big planet.
Oh, wow.
The movement of the things in this Kuiper Belt is as if there were another influence, another pull, much, much further out, deeper into space. And so people have talked about this as Planet Nine. Could there really be a Planet Nine? Not Pluto, but a much bigger world so far out that we haven't glimpsed it yet, but we're getting clues about it from the way it disturbs things closer in. So nobody's saying that it's really there. We're just getting hints, but a number of people, including Professor Michael Brown, the noted astronomer at Caltech, are searching and hunting for clues to Planet Nine.
Well, amazing. Just amazing. I know with the Hubble telescope, we were able to see so much deeper into space than ever before. Currently, is that the most powerful telescope that we have to look into space, or are we starting to develop something a little bit better than that one that can look even further back or further out?
That's a great question, and it's a profound and complicated answer. So depends on what you mean sort of by the best telescope. The Hubble Space Telescope has the clearest vision because it's above the Earth's atmosphere. So the Earth's atmosphere, which, you know, we appreciate when we can breathe it, is full of dirt and dust and clouds, and it moves around and makes the stars twinkle. So our vision from down here on the ground is not super clear. Whereas when you're in outer space above all that, your vision is crystal sharp and clear. So that's what the Hubble has. It's not the biggest telescope. It doesn't pull in the most amount of light. But boy, does it give sharp pictures. And, you know, we're now 30 years into the Hubble, and it's just fantastic still, the pictures that we're getting, the detail that we're getting. But there are much bigger telescopes on the Earth. The European Southern Observatory has a telescope in Chile, which is the largest telescope in the world. It's actually four telescopes working together to give you the equivalent of the world's largest telescope. Wow. And it's remarkable. It just discovered, it actually took a picture last week. There was a release of a picture of two Jupiters visible in actual light, not just indirectly detectable like these other planets I mentioned, but actually visible, two planets going around a star where they actually took a photograph of them with this world's largest telescope. So there are much bigger and therefore able to look deeper telescopes on the ground, and we're hoping to build others. There are even bigger telescopes on the drawing board all around the world.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Steve, you have any other questions for...
I thought I heard that there is another telescope we're going to send up, or something that's bigger than the Hubble.
Oh, you are well informed, indeed. It's been delayed 14,000 times. It's called the James Webb Telescope.
That's it, Webb.
The James Webb. This is the first telescope named not after an astronomer, but after a NASA administrator, which I don't think is a good trend. I think we should
do that.
Telescopes only after astronomers. But anyway, the James Webb Telescope is a bigger Hubble, a Hubble that will actually unfold itself in bigger in space than it is when it's all packaged up. And it will have a bigger eye. It will be able to draw in much more light. It'll also not just draw in visible light, but mostly heat rays, what we call infrared light, which is a kind of light that's a little bit, it's invisible to us, but it's a little bit longer waves than light. And there are all kinds of things in the universe that we would like to know about because they give off more heat than light. And so these heat rays are better at telling us about them. And so when this James Webb telescope goes into operation, hopefully next year or the year after that, we will then have an eye that sees better than the human eye because it sees invisible rays from the universe. And we will have a whole new picture of what's out there, including some of these planets that are that give off heat rays but don't give off light enough to see. And so it should be a wonderful era when the James Webb Telescope goes up. We're all looking forward to that.
Good job, Steve.
Hey, I don't just sit here in the corner and twiddle my thumbs, you know?
like usual, yeah.
No, that's me.
Zach, do you have a question for Mr. Reckley?
Yeah, sure. I've always wondered. One of my favorite movies of all time, this is within the last 5 years, is Interstellar. And the way I see, he's already the way I understood it is the way that they formulated a black hole was the first time it had ever been done using physics and science for a film like that. What I was curious is it possible to do what was done in that story? I mean, if not now, are we anywhere close to ever being doing something like we can go through a black hole and find habitable planet, these exoplanets, I guess they would be called.
Well, so this you raise a lot of excellent questions. You've picked on one of my all-time top favorite movies, Interstellar, if only because it's the only movie conceived, co-written, and co-produced by an astronomer who the next year won the Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Not too many movie producers get the Nobel Prize. So.
And Matthew McConaughey is a treasure.
And so, yes, this is the brainchild of Kip Thorne, the great physicist and astrophysicist at Caltech. And when Carl Sagan made the movie Contact, which was adapted from his novel, right, he actually consulted with Kip Thorne about a way to get the heroine in the movie Contact from Earth to another star without it taking, you know, thousands of lifetimes. And Kip Thorne then began to think about, well, if Carl Sagan can have a movie, then maybe I can have a movie. And he eventually got together with Linda Probst, who was a producer, and they got the director, Nolan, and others involved. And out of this came this amazingly complicated movie called Interstellar, which relied on what was then Kip Thorne's sort of main scientific contribution, which is a better understanding of black holes, of collapsed stars where gravity is completely overwhelming every other force in the universe, and space and time don't behave in the ways that we're used to. And so using black holes, you can actually slow down time, and there are even people, although this is very much more in the science fiction realm, people who think we can use black holes as a method of travel, that if you are properly protected, you might make a black hole into what's called a wormhole, and use that to travel faster than light into other areas. And that's what the movie does. The movie is, after the basic science, it's real science fiction. It does things that we don't think we can yet do. But the whole thing about time slowing down in the movie and the sort of the tragedy of the dad not getting back to see his daughter until she's very old, that's all a realistic way of looking at space and time using black holes. And so that all made sense. And you're absolutely right that the way in which the black hole was depicted, which was very beautiful in the movie, if you have a chance to see it, I recommend it. It's
so cool.
Visually wonderful. That development of the visual appearance of the black hole was done with a supercomputer. And you're absolutely right. The people who made the movie had more money than Caltech ever had for this research. So they were able to pay for a supercomputer depiction, for a rendering of that black hole that the scientists couldn't afford. And so Kip Thorne and his graduate students then put in the mathematical code for how such a black hole would look, and the supercomputer then developed it into those beautiful visuals. So it was absolutely something that wouldn't have been done without the movie.
And that black hole, they call it Gargantua. Sean, have you ever seen it?
No, I didn't.
They call it Gargantua, and it's when they get on the other side of our solar system, onto the other side where they get to another galaxy, it's like nothing you'd ever seen. It's incredible. Yeah. And you see it a bunch of times, like, you know, shots going back to it. Uh-huh. I won't ruin anything, but it's amazing what they were able to muster up with all that.
I'll definitely have to.
That's right. It's a very, very beautifully rendered black hole. And there's some, you know, very interesting speculation. And then at the same time, they've combined that with a movie about ecological catastrophe and the warning that we have to take care of the Earth, which is a message that I think resonates even more strongly today.
Absolutely.
Than it did then. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Franklin, Professor, you know, thank you so much for joining us today, and it was such an honor to have you on and to hear your voice once again, and to explain things again the way you explain it.
Well, thank you very much. Let me just say, in case any of your listeners do want to sort of learn more about what I'm up to or what's happening, I do have a website now in my retirement, which is just fracknoi.com. For some reason, that was not a popular URL that I had to worry about.
I wonder why.
Weird.
Yeah. So I mean, there's so many other Hungarians out there. You know, you would have thought that, you know, another Hungarian person out there would have grabbed it up, but no.
Some reason in the U.S. there are not too many. So it's Fracknoi, F-R-A-K-N-O-I, Fracknoi.com. And I've even started writing some science fiction in my retirement years, and that's on the website. So I encourage your listeners to take a look at it if they want some more.
Absolutely.
Some of these ideas.
I was looking at your site earlier this morning before we went on the air, and there is so much information on there. There's other interviews that you've done on other radio stations, pictures with you, with other famous astronomers. I think I only recognize two people on there. One was Bill Nye, the science guy. You know, it was one of the people there. But no, you have so much information also that that's posted on your website. And yeah, I definitely suggest that people go and check it out. And also, if you, when you do, please check out the bumper sticker section.
Yes, indeed. That was one of the fun things I got to do when I was with a nonprofit educational organization, is to make up some really bad puns as astronomical bumper stickers.
Yeah, and they're really good, Steve. They're really good.
I'm nothing if not a punster.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, Professor Fracknoi, thank you once again for joining us. And may we call you from time to time, just the way that Mark and Brian did when something special comes up or whatever regarding the stars?
Sure, absolutely, yes.
Wonderful.
I'm happy to reconnect with the Mark and Brian listeners.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's cool.
And I know we promoted it on the Facebook page that you were going to be on, not just ours, but the Mark and Brian Facebook page. And I know a lot of people were excited to hear your voice and everything. So, and I'm sure glad that they're recalling all the wonderful memories that you were on the show as well.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. You take care of yourself and you have a good one, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
I love his inherent love for the subject matter. Even after all these years through a career, he just seems still genuinely excited about anything having to do with
and
space. And
the
and
way
stuff, like,
he explains it.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, it's not dumbing it down, but it's language that everybody can understand.
Yes.
You know, like we were talking about, you know, other Earths, you know, the what do you call it? The something zone or whatever, you know.
Oh, the habitable zone.
The habitable zone. You know, it's like, that makes sense. You know, it's like, oh, okay, you have to be so far away from the sun in order for another planet like Earth to develop and everything, whatever, and you call that the habitable zone.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, because I was reading a little bit while he was talking, they call them exoplanets, E-X-O-planets.
Yeah.
And let's see. What was the little thing I read? Sorry, give me a moment. It said that there is like 3,000 different solar systems that have those kind of planets that we've discovered so far. And there's like 7,000 individual planets just throughout.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I mean, like I said, to listen to him, it makes you want to go back up to the observatory and just go through all the simplistic things that they have up there to explain the Earth and explain the moon and things that we've done and look at the constellations.
Oh, wow. Actually, you know what? Here, as of July 1st this year, I was wrong on the numbers. My apologies. There are 4,281 confirmed exoplanets in 3,163 systems, with 701 systems having more than one planet.
Jesus.
And that's just what we know right now.
Yeah.
You know, this whole having him on and discussing this, it reminds me when I was back in college in the 70s, I was going to Cuesta Junior College up in San Luis Obispo. Excuse me. And while I was there, when I started in 71, it was just an army base. And all the classes were in old barracks, and the gymnasium was a big armory type with the round roof. And the long, while I was there, about the second semester I was there, they started building a new campus for the college. And one of the things they did was they built a building with an astronomy lab in it with a telescope. And when they got it done, I was like, okay, and I took a class because I was really interested in it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, halfway through the semester, I had to move because of circumstances beyond my control. And so lost contact. Yeah, well, you know, you have to change your name, and you know, there's all kinds of rigmarole. Anyway, so I
he digress.
I feel bad that I didn't get to continue in that because it's so interesting, and I always want to know more.
More, yeah, exactly. I'm the same way. I'm a science nut, you know, especially with astronomy and with oceanography. I love those things, and it's just amazing because there's just so many things that we have yet to discover. You know, like I said, you know, have we learned everything that we can learn about our own solar system? No, there's so much more. Yeah. And I'm like, well, how much more is there? You know, apparently there's a shitload more. So,
and plus the undiscovered things that are out there that we, you know, it's so big and vast that it takes time to discover things that are still associated with our solar system.
Yeah.
That we haven't seen yet, but we may.
We may. Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, just such a pleasure to have him on. It was such an honor, again, for him to explain certain things for us and everything. Yeah. So
go watch Interstellar.
Yeah, no, you know what? I am. I really am, because now you
get
really
the wife,
got me intrigued.
Get the wife, get the kids, sit down, crack them some popcorn, and enjoy.
We may do that, because, you know, last night we were watching Skyfall outside on the garage back door there. So
just be prepared. It's a long one.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's a good. It's like a solid 2.5 hours. Most Christopher Nolan movies are extensively long.
Well, as long as Hamilton, then we're okay.
No, you're fine.
Okay, cool. We'll see, Hamilton's like 4 days long. So
who's got time for that?
Yeah, it took 4 days for me to watch the first half. That's all I'll say.
Yeah,
it seemed like it anyway.
Yeah, I didn't realize how long it was, because we had my sister come over with her kids, and we were watching it on Disney Plus. We did it through the computer, and we projected it on the wall, and I thought it was just going to be one whole thing, and then all of a sudden it goes intermission, and it's 11:30. I'm like going, holy crap, you know. So
yeah, well, Interstellar is 2 hours and 49 minutes long.
Another thing that I always love about it, and I love this about movies, it has a very, very powerful soundtrack.
Really?
Like, yeah. It has that spacey kind of feel. It really, Steve, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like, the music in it really makes you feel like you're
out there,
like part of being in space. Yeah. It really, really, really sets the tone.
Cool. I'll definitely have to check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
Absolutely.
Do it.
All right. Should we play the game, Steve?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's a game show that's causing Dr. Fauci to take off his mask and play Quiz Me, Quiz You.
And this is the, this is going to sound weird, the SS version, because it's Steve and Sean against each other.
Well, here we go.
Oh, wow. Real battle of wits about to commence. Question number one.
Pluto.
No. You hold your horses.
The Habitat Belt.
Habitable.
See, you can't say it neither.
Well, you've got the word so screwed up, nobody can say it.
It's going to be a fight instead of a game. Okay.
Habitable.
Yeah, that one.
That one. Okay, I guess we're ready to start.
Did we get the efforts out of our systems?
No.
Rivers of Babylon. Rivers of Babylon is a hit song sung by which outstanding musical group? This is literally the question.
I don't know if they're really that outstanding.
I have no idea.
Well, you have to say your name before you can give an answer.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I really don't know if they're that outstanding.
Rivers of Babylon.
Remember, it's S versus S, so.
Get a clue?
Sure. It's something that has to do with the human body. One of these lives inside of you.
Sean. The Pancreas.
It's a great name for a band, though.
Good evening, we're the Pancreas!
I love my pancreas.
Yeah. Take care of it.
Absolutely.
Steve?
Oh, my God.
Come on, Steve. Inside your body. Think.
Here, look at
me. Coldplay.
What the freaking hell? All right, both of you look at me.
Yeah. Oh, and the funny bone.
Take out funny, and there's your clue.
The bone.
Okay, that you got part of it.
The bone crusher.
The answer is Boney M.
I thought he got one.
Suck it! I had a Boney M one time, and I had to file it down.
It was originally sung by the reggae group The Melodonians in 1970, and it was Boney M's rendition of The River Babylon, which became a hit, especially in the UK, where it is a one...
no wonder.
Yeah,
well, one hit wonder in the UK. Go figure.
Here, go get Roman. He'll know this. The word Pokemon is generally understood to be a translation of what phrase?
Sean. Got to catch them all. No?
Well, it's not the phrase. It's actually kind of the translation of what the word means.
Oh.
I don't know why they put
Steve.
Phrase. Steve.
10.
I've actually kind of always known this.
I don't know.
The answer is Pocket Monsters.
Pokemon.
Boy, that just took on a whole new meaning.
Yeah, it's question number three.
Hey,
put that Pokemon back in your pants.
You want to see my pocket monster? Wow. I got to use that now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got to use it.
The Gronks found that out a long time ago.
Oh, Gina.
Pocket monster.
What is the largest three-digit prime number?
Sean. 417.
You know 4 is an even number, right?
But 17 isn't.
Steve.
That wouldn't make sense. Steve?
999.
Steve is close enough. 997.
Wow.
That's the best it's going to probably get. Question number 4.
I give it to you, too, yeah.
Did on Wednesday. In 2015, who got back their job as the Washington Nationals closer?
Who got back his job for the Washington Nationals closer?
Yeah.
The sports question.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Excellent. The answer is Drew.
Oh, Drew. Yeah.
Soren.
It's Drew Soren. Yeah, Drew Soren.
Drew.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Five. Drew.
Drew.
Or draw.
I miss Amber draw. Already. What is the first element of the periodic table?
Steve. Hydrogen.
Correct. All right, good. Moving along.
Ooh.
Watch number 6.
Aha.
I got one.
Aha.
Aha.
In what year did World War II end?
Sean. 1945.
That is correct.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wow, Sean is just, regular information maestro over there. Question number 7.
Got one question.
According to legend, which was the favorite flower of Venus, the Roman goddess of love?
Sean. The rose.
Close enough. Red roses. According to legend.
She actually liked lilies, but, according to legend, it was roses.
Yeah, question number 8.
You are quick.
Yeah. Thanks.
Which NBA team was known as the Run TMC in the late 1980s and early 1990s?
Say that again.
Run TMC.
Run TMC.
They were nicknamed Run.
Not Rum, Run.
Damn, that's disappointing.
I can give you the names of the players and the team if that would help.
In the 80s?
It says the late 80s and early 90s.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Chicago Bulls.
Damn it! Sean. The Lakers?
Well, so far Sean's in the least the right state.
Sean. Clippers.
Steve. Warriors.
There you go.
That's the only one
Golden
left.
Golden State Warriors. It said it consists of, it was referring to Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, and Chris Mullen. It's an acronym for Run TMC based on the first letter of their names due to their fast-paced, high-scoring style. Question number 9.
I wonder if they chase waterfalls.
If a person is shot with one of Cupid's lead-tipped arrows.
Yes.
What? Say
what
that
was your
again.
Name?
No, I just said yes.
Oh, okay. If a person is shot, don't you raise that tone. Yeah. If a person is shot with one of Cupid's lead-tipped arrows, uh-huh. what emotion do they feel?
Sean. Sorrow.
No.
No?
Close. That's not the one I'm looking for.
Steve. Lethargy.
Sean.
Sean.
See, I said sorrow, so, heartache?
You guys aren't going to get it. The answer is repulsion.
Repulsion? What?
Yeah. Unlike Cupid's golden arrows, which induce feelings of love in its targets, the lead arrow makes the victim loathe and want to get away from the person that they see. Final question.
That's what's been happening to me.
All these years.
It's been the lead arrows. Oh, my God. I got to find something to counteract
that. It's all that salt and sugar you put in your food.
Or that I tell others to put in and can't do it right.
They can't do it right. They just don't believe it.
How many departments does the Ministry of Magic have?
Sean.
Steve.
One.
No. Steve.
Three.
God, here goes the number game.
Five. Is it higher?
Just keep going till you get it.
100? Is it higher or lower?
Lower.
Lower, okay.
Two.
Higher.
Seven.
50.
Wait.
Seven?
That is correct.
Seven?
Steven. The British Ministry of Magic has seven departments, with the Department of Magical Law Enforcement being the most prominent.
Good for them.
Yeah.
That's it?
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. That's how...
Quick show, huh?
10 questions,
wow.
Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. After the 10th one, we're done.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to Professor Fracknoid.
Who taught you how to spoke?
And he got... we got the spelling right for... Yeah. Right. There is no N in it.
Right.
That's Sean. That's Sean's bad on the paper right here.
Hey,
yeah, well, I didn't know either, so...
When you're up at 3:30 in the morning, too, so...
Hey, I was up at 1:30, okay?
Okay, Fist.
Ooh.
I got you guys beat. I didn't go to sleep till 4.
Wow.
He could be lying.
Wow.
I'm not.
No, I know Steve Villano, yeah.
I did a little bit of writing, too, so...
Yeah, okay.
Well, guys, if you want to follow us on our website, simpleweeklydose.com. Facebook page is Your Weekly Dose. Twitter and Instagram, it's the same, Your Weekly Dose 1.
And me, Steve. Facebook, Steve Silva. Twitter, @SilvaLining69.
Oh, and I'm @ZombieMelGibson on Instagram.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. Absolutely am.
Yeah. And hopefully next week we get Amber back in the room.
Yep, she didn't wake up. Maybe she's dead.
Because I thought she was going to come in today.
Like I said, early this morning, she said she wasn't feeling good, and she said she told you. But I guess...
No.
Well, just...
That's how bad she was.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, because I didn't hear anything.
She was hallucinating.
So. Absolutely.
Oh, well. What are you going to do?
All right, guys. Well, you know what? Go out there, have a good weekend, whether here on the West Coast or the East Coast. It seems like it's going to be sunny in both areas, so go out and... Try and enjoy, but be safe when you do. Make sure you stay 6 feet away from each other. 6 feet, yeah. Away from
good Lord.
I can't talk right now. I don't know.
Well, and now it's 90 degrees over there on the East Coast. So
it is nice out there right
having
now.
Having a beautiful day, I imagine.
Yeah, just 6 feet or more. Stay away from each other, yeah. You know? Be good to each other. Be nice to each other.
You don't like each other most of the time anyway, so
exactly.
Just keep doing what you're doing.
Exactly. So, just do what you do normal.
Yeah.
Other than that, wear your masks. It's important. Please. I know we don't want to. I know they're uncomfortable. But you know what? Sometimes you can get a really good mask. It's going to, get rid of all the bad stuff and only let in the good stuff.
No one cared who I was till I put on the mask.
See? It worked for Bane. It can work for you. Simple as that. So, in the meantime, folks, go out there, have a good weekend, and be good to each other.
Have fun, world.
The best soy latte that you ever had in me. But tell me, did the wind sweep you off your feet? Did you finally get the chance to dance?
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.